Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at cindysheehansoapbox.com or communityprogressiveradio.org. Our show today is filled with information, inspiration, and a little controversy. Our guests are author Mike Whitney and activist Scott Olson. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Mike Whitney. Our first guest today is Mike Whitney. Mike is an author who lives in Washington State and contributes to Counterpunch. Mike Whitney, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Hi, Cindy, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's really nice to finally have you on. So tell my listeners a little bit about yourself, Mike.
Well, there's not much to tell. I only started writing when Bush took office, and I started taking all this stuff a lot more seriously, primarily right after the Axis of Evil speech, and I thought things were really going to escalate pretty quickly, which they did. And actually, I have my own business, landscaping business, which I had for 30 years and was not politically involved up to that point except for, you know, protesting during the Vietnam War and stuff like that. And so I started investigating things, started writing about civil rights and the war, and of course economics, which is kind of my long suit now. And the reason I kind of veered off into economics, not because I had any real driving interest in it, but because I think that is really the point of vulnerability where this whole thing is going to tip in the opposite direction. And I think that's what we have to look for is, basically imperial overreach that's going to affect the economy at home. And so that's where I look to see the big changes happening.
And your articles appear in many online publications. Can you tell my listeners some places they can find your articles?
Well, I write almost exclusively now for Counterpunch, but I used to write for, oftentimes they appear at Information Clearinghouse and Different
right.
Voice and Global Research and a few others that I can't seem to recall right now.
Well, you know, the same places that will oftentimes publish my articles. And I remember when I first started writing after my son was killed, all the, Truth Out and Common Dreams and Buzz Flash, they used to always print my articles. But now that I've become not just anti-war, but anti-imperialist and anti-capitalist and anti the two major party, they don't publish my articles anymore.
Yeah, there's a kind of an invisible line that's, it's actually very visible when you write that if you, I found that very quickly with antiwar.com, is that they have their own, position on these things, and if you cross that line, then you're just not going to appear on their slate of writers, and I think Truth Out is the same way. They just, they want to appear as radical as possible without, making transgressions that they feel like are unacceptable. So, I mean, most of these groups, basically, or these sites, fall within the Democratic Party sort of venue. Particularly, I would say like Huffington Post is really—it's just become kind of a soapbox for the Democratic Party. But Truth Out, and I still, when I send stuff to Buzz Flash, I get published there, but I haven't sent anything to them for quite some time. But I think you're right about that. They just they have their parameters, and if you don't fit within their pigeonhole, you're not going to get published.
Well, you write often about one of my favorite subjects, Venezuela and Hugo Chavez, and why do you think that subject is important?
Well, I mean, first of all, the news reporting in this country is so biased against Chavez, it's just ridiculous. I mean, he has made, he's made great strides for the people of that country as far as literacy, as far as raising people from extreme poverty, as far as people joining communes and co-ops and healthcare and any number of things that have helped the average working people. But, of course, Venezuela has an entrenched oligarchy that controls a good portion of the media, and our media is extremely, and our corporatists who stand to benefit from someone like Chavez disappearing is very strongly in support of those people, just as they are in Mexico and all the Latin American countries. So, it's what he symbolizes to, Washington, which is a threat to the existing power scheme, which we see more and more prevalent in the United States, where, inequality is just getting so exacerbated, and where, workers' rights and unions are especially being crushed, and where things are just getting more difficult. So this is just it in a, I just think they see him as a primary threat. You can't really find anything that is written about him fairly in this country.
Well, I like how you said the media there is primarily controlled by the oligarchy, and one of the accusations that our propaganda media and our oligarchy wants to say is that he suppresses the media, or he suppresses freedom of speech, which, is just one of the most hypocritical accusations that can be leveled at him, because even if our media is we know that the media, the corporate media in the world, is owned by basically six people or six institutions, and that's very propagandist towards what the Occupy movement calls the 1% and the wars and empire and neoliberalism. So what if Chavez has a couple of state-owned TVs? There's still terrible media in Venezuela that you can just go to Venezuela and turn on the TV and see that accusation is completely false.
Yeah, and even with all that propaganda, he still has pretty pretty remarkable lead in the upcoming election, from my understanding. And also, it's my understanding that he only cracked down on one of the media outlets, and that was the one media outlet that could be traced to be directly involved in the organizing and the original coup against him. Isn't that correct, Cindy?
Well, and the thing is, too, is that Venezuela has the same situation that we have. They have their own federal communications monitor, and, our FCC will shut down media outlets that are serial violators of the codes, and that's what happened in Venezuela. And so nobody.
Yeah. What you're saying.
Yeah. Nobody criticizes the U.S. empire for suppressing freedom of speech, which they regularly do anyway. So.
Absolutely. Yes.
So,
no one should know that better than you, Cindy.
That's for sure. So, and let's get to the subject of why I asked you to be on, is because I've been kind of monitoring what's happening in Russia with the so-called Pussy Riot. And the reason I hate that word pussy is because, A, I'm a feminist, and B, when people exhibit a lack of courage, or if they're cowardly, they're called a pussy. And if you are brave, you're said to have balls. And I just, want to just be very clear that some of the bravest activists and people I know are women. And so to degrade women, I think, degrading other women using that terminology is wrong. But I've also wondered why, when protest is so violently oppressed and suppressed in the United States, when the FBI is regularly knocking down people's doors who are only engaged in opposition to the state, why is the I'm putting pussy quotes in air quotes for people who can't see me because this is radio, why are they getting such amazing attention from our media?
Yeah, exactly. And not only in this country, but, if you have women, say, in Saudi Arabia who are beheaded for either obscenity or for adultery or something like that, or there was a story yesterday about women in Pakistan, another ally of ours in the war against terror, is going to be killed for defiling a Koran, and there was just on and on the human rights abuses. But, you know, almost arbitrarily, the media seems to... I mean, the first day that this story broke, there were like 2,500 stories on Pussy Riot, this kind of, you know, this group that never cut a single, that hasn't played in any of the main venues in Moscow or anything. You know, they're just kind of this makeshift group, and they've attracted this attention. And it makes you think that, you know, why would there be 4,000 articles, all of them rah-rah Pussy Riot, the next day, when it's such an insignificant thing? And, you know, you just have, I take this all back to the Terri Schiavo incident, where the woman, it seemed to me like the media was really testing their wings as far as whether they could create this sense of a populist groundswell, when in fact, you know, I was just reviewing some of the story, the issue on this woman who was essentially brain dead, and I hope that's not the wrong way to put it, but, you know, and she had made a deal with her husband that he would not allow her to live on life support if she got into that sort of critical condition that she wanted to take off life support. And 82% of the people who were polled supported Michael Schiavo's right to take out the feeding tubes and to let her die a natural death. But the media was creating this sense that there were millions of people who were outraged that someone would be acting as God and taking away her life and stuff like that. It was the media that was trying to affect the outcome here, when it was obvious through the polling that even conservative fundamentalists were against this by a margin of 46% to 44%. So even the most conservative base of the Republican Party did not support what the media was professing to do. And this is, I think the media was just basically testing their wings to see if they could create this populist groundswell. And they've kind of perfected in this Pussy Riot thing, where you have 4,000 articles, all of them virtually saying, cookie cutter articles that virtually say the same thing, you know. These people are being persecuted. We love freedom of expression in the United States. Therefore, Putin is the bad guy, because Putin is secretly hiding behind the curtain, that he's running the whole outcome of this court. And it's all because it probably has more to do with the fact that Putin just rejected the idea that that NATO and the United States would have a no-fly zone over Syria, which is a serious obstruction to their plan to disintegrating Syria in the same way that we have Iraq. So I don't know whether you see that connection or not, but that's where I think these things all, it just shows that basically the media now operates as kind of a wing of the Pentagon, as it were, so that they are basically the information collecting apparatus for persuading people or for mobilizing public opinion.
Well, also, I see that connection for sure, about Syria and Russia and China's opposition to what, you know, the U.S. and its puppets are doing there. But also, what about the fact that President Obama, like, has a kill list, that he's assassinated at least 3 Americans without their due process? And, you know, who knows, he has very opaque kill list in a process that is not transparent at all.
Well, absolutely. I mean, here, the 3 women in this band were got a 2-year sentence, which I think is pretty extreme for the offense. But in fact, 51%, I sent you that sheet, that the survey that was done in Moscow, that 51% of the people feel that there's basically nothing redeemable about this group, because they've been involved in all other kinds of obscene demonstrations. People just don't sympathize with them at all. And so at least you know what public opinion is over there, despite the 4,000 stories over here. But yeah, if we look at the disparity between, you know, American citizens and basically having no habeas corpus rights, that the president at his own discretion just can kill them or blow them up with a cruise missile, and compare that to someone who has had a trial, however, you know, balanced it was or not, at least got to have their case heard before a judge. I don't think there's any comparison, you know. Over here, depending on, you know, if you're on the president's kill list or not, you have no right to a defense. You have no ability to plead your innocence. You have nothing. So, how do we even compare that?
Well, and I see, you know, that there's a lot, and this isn't really about the Pussy Riot. To me, that was just a stunt. You know, that was just a very, I guess, a very effective publicity stunt because they got a lot of publicity. And, you know, so it's not really about them. It's about, but if you criticize anybody that the liberals have put as heroes, like the Pussy Riot or Julian Assange, no matter what, you don't, what you say is not about Julian Assange or about the Pussy Riot. It's about the status quo or the establishment and how they're using these people for their own ends. If you even like are mildly critical about some aspect of it, you get like, just like I don't know if you've had this kind of reaction to the article you wrote that I read in Counterpunch, but you know, you're the one that gets, I find this for myself. If I say, well, how come Julian Assange is getting all this attention when Bradley Manning has been in a military prison for over 2 years, I think something over 800 days, and everybody knows Julian Assange's name, but how many people know about Bradley Manning? Again, where is all the
Yes,
celebrity a
exactly. I mean,
support of Bradley Manning?
yeah, I
Because
mean, you
it's
don't see
Obama,
Madonna.
because we can directly connect this to Obama. Bradley Manning's commander said that he was already guilty, and Obama said that about Bradley Manning. But where are all these people? Where's Madonna criticizing Obama about Bradley Manning? Where's the celebrity supporting him?
Well, maybe you noticed on Counterpunch the next day they even had an article that was basically calling me ignorant and a misogynist and all this kind of stuff because of the analysis I did, which I stick by, you know. I mean, maybe you know, Putin certainly has his flaws, you know, if we look at Chechnya and stuff like that, and these very serious human rights abuses. There is a slight distinction between someone trying to maintain the integrity of their country as far as keeping Chechnya as part of Russia, as opposed to pursuing imperial interests, though I think, you know, I mean, Chechnya is much more defendable than is Iraq, for that matter. But yeah, I mean, again, the discrepancy and the unfairness and the bias and not focusing these 4,000 articles on the condition of Bradley Manning, rather on the condition of you know, these punk rockers in Moscow, I think just illustrates what the real function of the media is. And it's just an amazing, I mean, you look at Russia and you think, well, they had Pravda and everyone goes, you know, har, 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 you know. But when you have all these different news services and they basically produce the same article, you know, it's really kind of frightening because it's a very effective system for you know, co-opting public opinion. Although, like you pointed out, in a place like Venezuela, where you still have the guy who is lambasted the most, you know, egregiously in the Venezuela media is still ahead in the polls. So I think we're nearing that point where after the Downing Street memo and the phony WMDs and all this stuff, that the amount of lying has led to the point where the distrust in our basic institutions, and Gallup points this out too, where the basic distrust is at a level that we've never seen before in this country, that people are basically not only disenchanted with the government and our institutions, but are getting increasingly wary of capitalism itself.
Well, yay!
Yeah.
Yay for that.
I'm with you
So,
on that.
Mike, do you have anything else to add? And then I want you to tell my listeners how, if there's any way that they can get a hold of you or where they can read your article. But I will post the link at my site too.
Sure. You know, about this particular incident, you know, it was kind of a one-off article. I was amazed at the emails I've gotten from around the world, from Moscow, from Belgium, from Australia, from there really are a lot of people paying attention to this, and there are a lot of people who are, you know, just contrarians, and they see this overwhelming support for this group, and they immediately become kind of suspicious, because the thing is that so many people are suspicious of the media right now and don't like to be told what to think and don't like to be told, you know, how they should feel about different things. So I don't think we should be discouraged from the fact that the media, the corporate media, and the people who are getting paychecks to produce a certain sort of truth, which is actually, you know, bogus, you know, come up with the same sort of storyline or same sort of narrative on all of these cases. But and if people want to get in touch with me, my email address is Fergie Whitney, that's Fergiewhitney at MSN.com.
And great. And like I said, I will post a link to the article, the related article that we've been discussing at my site and at my newsletter too. So Mike Whitney, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. It was great to finally talk to you.
It's great to finally talk to you, and thank you for all the work you do.
Illegal occupations, the loss of civil liberties, torture, wiretapping, national security letters, renditions, hatred against Muslims, the bankrupting of this country. All of it has been done in the name of 9/11. Well, we were lied to about 9/11. There is no justification for the post-9/11 world and everything it entails. Please join people like 9/11 family members Lori Van Auken and Donna Marsh O'Connor, 9/11 whistleblowers Colleen Rowley and Sibel Edmonds, Cindy Sheehan, Ray McGovern, and many others, and sign the statement for 9/11 justice. If wars can be started by lies, they can be ended with the truth. Stop the 9/11 wars. You can find the statement at cindysheehansoapbox.blogspot.com or Google ipetitions.com and statement for 9/11 justice, and you will find it.
Our next guest is Scott Olson. Scott is a member of Iraq Vets Against the War and was critically injured by the Oakland Police Department last year at an Occupy Oakland event. Scott Olson, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's awesome to finally have you on. So I think most of my listeners are very smart and very well-informed, and I'm sure they know what happened to you last year. But in case they don't, can you give us a recap about what happened and how your recovery is going?
Sure. Last October 25th, I was at an Occupy protest in Bend, and shot me in the head with a beanbag round. And that put me in the hospital for 2.5 weeks, and I could not speak when I woke up. I had a broken neck, massive brain bleeding, all these things. But you know, I'm doing a lot better now. I'm almost fully recovered, but I'm questioning if my recovery is progressing at all anymore. I think I've gone about as far as I am, and I still do have a few problems with speaking and a few problems related to traumatic brain injury.
You had a broken neck? I didn't know that.
Yeah, my one of my vertebrae was fractured.
And we saw the video of your friends pulling you out of the line of fire. Did that do more damage to? I mean, I'm not blaming them. It's understandable.
Right. I don't think it did. I mean, first of all, they weren't really my friends at the time, but they became my friends afterwards. And there's a lot of speculation that there's any damage to that, because there's no like long-term damage related to that.
Well, we're all friends in the struggle, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So this is the first time we've ever spoken, but I feel like I do know you, and I sent something to you when you were in the hospital. I don't know if you got it.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, thanks for that. I got a huge stack of cards and stuff, and it took me a while to comb through.
Well, speaking of that, now I want to talk about, well, before we talk about what you did last week for Bradley Manning, let's talk about, is there any accountability for the Oakland PD for what they did to you? Are there any cases going on suing them for brutality or anything?
We have, a few months ago, we did file a complaint against the city of Oakland, and we're still working on filing a lawsuit. We're probably going to file within the next month or so. We just want to make sure we're well-prepared and in a good position to do so.
There was many instances of police brutality and excessive force during those Occupy Oakland when they were dispersing you all, but it seems like yours was the most egregious.
Yeah, it seems that way, and or at least made the biggest deal out of. But I mean, yeah, it was really sad to be in the hospital and watching that continue happening, especially to Kayvon Sebagi, the other veteran in Oakland, who a week after I was hurt, he got put in the hospital in critical condition with a broken spleen. It was just so sad watching that to keep happening. And, you know, I realize that my case isn't really all that special. It just got blown up a bit, and it's a problem that's been going on for years and years. And it's good that people finally took notice, and maybe we can do something about this.
Well, I think that you're right. I think it has been happening for decades now. There's nothing new in the brutality. It just appears that it started happening to a different demographic of people, so people started to take more notice of it.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate.
And, you know, I hope that there is some accountability. Who's your attorney? Do you have an attorney?
Yeah, I have, my attorney is Mark Martel out of Palo Alto. And me and him are typically on the same page about our next steps, so it's been working out well.
Is there any place that people can contribute to a legal defense fund or anything?
Not really at the moment. We did have a fund with Veterans for Peace and Iraq Veterans Against the War, but I don't think those are really still open. But, yeah, we will be needing more money for legal fees to hire all these expert witnesses to testify. And so that's something that we're going to start working on, raising a little bit of money for.
Well, keep me posted, and we can send that information out when it becomes available throughout, you know, all our various networks. But the reason I was reminded of Bradley Manning when I asked you if you got what I sent you in the hospital was because I've sent two cards to him, one when he was at Quantico and one when he was at, when he's at Fort, where is he, Leavenworth, and
yep.
They both got returned to me. So I thought that was very weird. But last week, you and several other vets and activists had a sit-in at an Obama re-election campaign headquarters, which I think was an absolute brilliant move. I saw also like a great grandma in Portland doing the same thing, getting arrested. So tell me and my listeners what happened last week when you performed that action.
Sure. Well, in advance, we had billed it as a rally in action for Bradley Manning. And, you know, we recognize that, you know, we've gone on so many marches for Bradley Manning and rallies, and those haven't gotten enough attention. So we put a lot of planning and work into planning the action to accompany the rally. Now, that action was kept secret until it actually happened. So what happened is, us three veterans from Iraq Veterans Against the War and a few people who were working with us went to the Obama campaign office in Oakland while the rally was taking place. And we got glad. The doors were locked, but one of the people pretended to register as a voter. So they unlocked the four doors for him, and we followed him. And we stayed there, and within a few minutes, the rally was notified, and they were a few blocks away, so they marched up to join us. And our goal was to have a letter faxed to the National Campaign Office, and the letter was regarding the way Bradley Manning has been treated, and also Obama's essential declaration of guilt of him,
right,
which is undue command influence.
Right. Did they fax the letter?
Well, they claim not to have a fax machine. and yeah, and then later in the day, when we were talking with the cops, one of the lieutenant in charge of the operation, he got them to scan and email it to them, even though we had asked them prior. You know, we knew they had other options other than faxing, but he kind of got them to send it, and so that was a way of getting attention, but I don't know if it was enough. We had we continued the sit-in for a couple hours, and the cops continued to try to talk us into leaving. And, you know, they eventually set, like, a deadline of 8:45, either you're leaving or we're going to arrest you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that. And we all, as a group, we decided that I should probably leave without getting arrested, and everybody else spent the night in jail.
So what was the reaction of the people who worked in the Obama's reelection campaign headquarters?
Well, it was mixed a bit, but overall they were a little aggressive towards us. I'm sure they didn't really know what to expect. It's only been a few weeks since their windows were broken by another protest, and so at first they were a bit aggressive. They were trying to push us out and push us out of their area, but then cooler heads prevailed amongst them, and they just sat in the back and kept themselves.
Well, you know, first of all, that was a brilliant strategy, I think. It really is past time for just marches. You know, we have to strategically, you know, do strategic targeting of, well, I already said targeting, but, you know, these targets, of course.
Right.
Obama said that Bradley Manning was already guilty. Obama has the power to release him. So this was a great place to go, absent, like, going to the White House and chaining yourself to the fence, which they would just cut you down and take you to jail anyway.
Right, and one of the points that the cops brought up when they were talking to us is, you know, this isn't the place to do this. You can go to your national campaign office in some other city and go there, but
right,
this is the only place here in Oakland where we can have our voice heard by Obama. It's the only avenue of approach towards him.
Well, and then also this day and age, I know that activists don't have the money to be traveling around, you know, across the country,
right,
and all the time. So there's, in any large city, there's going to be an Obama HQ, and that's what we have to do. Instead of spending money going to other places, we have places in our own communities that we need to target.
Right, and aside from the fact that we're not often able to do that, it shouldn't be necessary to do that.
Right. Well, right. I think the strategy of the 1%, you know, using the terms of Occupy, is to just, like, wait us out and suck us dry,
right,
so we don't have any resources to keep protesting. And the one brilliant thing, well, of the many brilliant things of Occupy, is bringing, protests and things like this to a local level. And it's where more people can be involved. Not everybody has the means or the time to go to Washington, D.C. and protest. So I think it was a brilliant strategy. I congratulate you all on it. And the next time I would only ask is if you guys told me about it so I could be there too.
Well, sorry about that.
You have my contact
number. We actually are planning a, during the DNC, September 6th, we have put out the call for a national occupation of his offices for to organize around any issue that affects you most or that you care about the most, whether it's Bradley Manning, anti-war in general, medical marijuana, women's issues, whatever draws you into, you know, what you care about and what you want to have your voice heard on, we can organize a national occupation around those issues.
Oh, perfect. Roseanne Barr and I are running for president and I'm vice president, and we're having a big rally in Oakland that day in the evening at the Grand Lake Theater. So I think that I can commit that we'll be there for your protest. And in Oakland, our message is about medicinal cannabis and about how the feds are raiding our dispensaries and growers and things like that in California. When California, the voters of California passed the law, permitting the use of medicinal cannabis.
Right, and you know, there's such a long list of Obama's broken promises, and there's ample opportunity for people to get involved in that.
Oh, great. So let's keep in touch, and if you guys have more information, you can let us know so we can join you in that protest. So, Scott Olson, is there anything else you want to add? Do you have any way that our listeners could contact you or get more information about your activism and your case and everything like that?
Well, the best way, the most way I keep up to date is via Twitter. So I'm at OlsenVet, OlsenVet. So that's probably the best way for now. I'm working on getting a website so I can self-publish information related to what I'm doing and activism and my case as well.
Perfect. I can help you on that because I do that myself for my show if you need help. But like I said, keep in touch and let us know how we can promote your actions and if you get a fund for and what we can do to help you in holding the Oakland PD and the mayor of Oakland accountable for that terrible police brutality last year and is, you know, actually continuing. So keep in touch, and thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, Scott.
I will. Thanks for having me, Cindy.
That's our really big show for the day. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed making it for you. We are already lining up a great show for next week, too, so I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited that the show is able to continue with your support. And, of course, you can always support the show by going to CindySheehanSoapbox.com and clicking on the donate link. I'd like to thank, as always, Don DeBar, my engineer, and he's also from Community Progressive Radio. I'd like to thank my producer, Mikey. I'd love to thank my guests, Mike Whitney and Scott Olson, and you for listening and supporting the show. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.